Initiative, a fun, family-friendly event to help build connections between community members and city staff. The event will be held Monday, November 5th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. in the Canyon Gallery of the Ming Library on Arapahoe Avenue. More details are available at bouldercolorado.gov/neighborhoods.
Well, good evening, and welcome everyone to the Opera Box. I'm your host, Ron Nadell, and tonight my playlist is full of woe, hopeless, poignant moments of dismay, such as Cavaradossi's Act 3 aria from Tosca. I've also got music of Richard Strauss, Giuseppe Verdi, Giacomo Puccini, and even Gilbert and Sullivan. So let's give your empathy a workout and join me in tonight's Opera Box. A luce ven la stella, and the stars were shining. The condemned Mario Cavaradossi thinks back on the first time he saw his lover Tosca, knowing he's to be executed at dawn. From Puccini's Tosca, and we heard the great Jose Carreras as Cavaradossi. Colin Davis conducted the orchestra of Covent Garden. It's 4 minutes after 7 o'clock. You're in the Opera Box with Ron Nadell at KGNU, and I've got a playlist of woeful, hopeless operatic moments, often filled with dismay, a reflection of our times. There's nothing like a moment of rich self-pity or melancholy to stir up our empathy for a very satisfying emotional outlet. And one of the most famous moments of woe is from theater's most melancholy character, Hamlet, with his famous soliloquy, "To be or not to be." Hamlet has promised to avenge his father's murder at the hand of his uncle Claudius, but Hamlet is unable to do the deed. Caught between his conscience and his promise, he contemplates suicide as a way out. Here's that moment from Ambroise Thomas' opera, Hamlet. To be or not to be, to die, to sleep. Hamlet contemplates suicide as a way out of his conflicting sense of duty and his conscience. From Act 3 of Ambroise Thomas' Hamlet. We heard the great Thomas Hampson as Hamlet. Antonio de Almeida conducted the London Philharmonic Orchestra. We're just 9 minutes after 7 o'clock, and if you just joined me, you are in the Opera Box with Ron Nadel here at KGNU, and I've got a program featuring operatic moments of woe and dismay as a reflection of our own times. One of the most famous and often parodied moments of dismay is from I Pagliacci, The Clowns, the melodramatic opera by Ruggero Leoncavallo. The time frame is the 1860s, and Canio is the head of a troupe of acting clowns. In the first act, he learns his wife is being unfaithful. So at the end of the act, he must prepare for their performance on stage and put on his costume, vesti la giubba, and somehow prepare to be funny while overcome by self-pity and irony. Rili Pagliaccio, laugh, clown, while your heart is breaking. Canio, the leader of an acting troupe of clowns, overcome with dismay, learning his wife is unfaithful, yet putting on his costume and preparing to be funny on stage. We heard the great Placido Domingo as Canio. Nello Santi conducted the London Symphony Orchestra. Well, you're in the Opera Box with Ron Nadel and my program of Hopeless Dismay in Opera. And this next moment finds a young woman who, like Hamlet, faces suicide as a way out of a terrible situation. I'm talking about Cho-Cho-san from Madame Butterfly. The young Japanese girl Cho-Cho-san, called Butterfly by her friends, married the American sailor, Lieutenant Pinkerton, in Act One of Puccini's drama, and he promised to return after his next cruise. Unknown to Pinkerton, she has his child and waits faithfully for him to return. Years pass. One day, she sees Pinkerton's ship enter the harbor. Filled with joy, she prepares to introduce Pinkerton to their son, expecting to resume their life together. But when Pinkerton arrives, he arrives with an American wife. Alone, Cho-Cho-san contemplates her situation, knowing she and her son will be outcasts in Japan with no Japanese father, and realizing she now has no husband to support her and her son. She realizes she must give the child up to Pinkerton and his wife. It's best for him. Faced with that unhappiness, she decides her only way out is suicide, and taking her father's ritual knife, she kills herself as Pinkerton comes running in too late. Cho-Cho-San, contemplating her hopeless situation, knowing she must give up her son. Unable to face a life without honor, she commits ritual suicide. From Act 3, the powerful conclusion of Puccini's Madama Butterfly. And in that recording, we heard the great Mirella Freni as Butterfly, with Luciano Pavarotti arriving a little too late as Lieutenant Pinkerton. Herbert von Karajan conducted the Vienna Philharmonic. After 7 o'clock, you're in the Opera Box with Ron Nadel and my program of operatic moments of hopelessness. And please be sure to stay with me after the Opera Box for A Classic Monday. I'm going to have the 7th in my series of programs of tone poems. Tonight, the music is inspired by Italy. That's right here on KGNU at 8 p.m. One of Verdi's earliest successes was Rigoletto, the Duke's hunchback jester. As a jester, Rigoletto entertains the Duke, often by insulting others, who then come to hate him. And the tables turn. Rigoletto's daughter, Gilda, is kidnapped by his enemies, members of the Duke's entourage. In Act Two, Gilda tells her father how she was fooled by the Duke and allowed the Duke to seduce her. Rigoletto bemoans the loss of her innocence and their reputation, realizing it's all his fault. The jester Rigoletto and his daughter Gilda, overcome with dismay, commiserate over their ruined reputations and loss of innocence. From Act Two of Verdi's Rigoletto, and in that recording we heard Aditya Gruberova as Gilda. Renata Brusson was Rigoletto. Giuseppe Sinopoli conducted the orchestra of the Academy of St. Cecilia. And we're coming up now 27 minutes before 8 o'clock. You're listening to The Opera Box. I'm your host, Ron Nadel, with a program of operatic moments of hopelessness and dismay. These next two are illustrations of different kinds of distress. One is the loss of affection, and the other, the loss of youth. Both by Richard Strauss. The first one is from his fairy tale, Die Frau ohne Schatten, The Woman Without a Shadow. And in this fairy tale, the empress has no shadow, which means she cannot have children. The wife of the poor peasant dyer, Barak, has agreed to sell her shadow to the empress, and that means she mustn't get pregnant. And thus she cannot sleep with her husband, Barak. So in this scene from the end of Act One, it's toward the end of the evening, she informs Barak that she is making up separate beds for them. She uses the excuse that she has visiting cousins coming. The dyer lies in his bed lonely and hurt. And to make his situation worse, as the night watchmen come and make their rounds, calling out, they exhort married couples to lie in each other's arms for the sake of future generations.
Thank you.
Very well, then. The village dyer, Bodok, lies alone in his bed with his wife in a separate bed, and he doesn't understand why she's so cold to him. From Act One of Die Frau ohne Schatten, The Woman Without a Shadow by Richard Strauss. We heard the great José Van Damme as Bodok, and Georg Schulte conducted the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra. This next moment of dismay is from Strauss' bittersweet comedy, Der Rosenkavalier. It takes place in Vienna in the 1700s, during the rule of Princess Marie Therese. While her husband, the field marshal, is away, she has taken a young lover, Octavian. He's also a member of the aristocracy. And in the first act, Marie Therese is visited by her cousin, the fat, older Baron Ox. He's in Vienna to marry a very young girl, Sophie, as part of an arrangement with her nouveau riche parents. At the end of Act One, Marie Therese thinks about this poor young girl tied to an old buffoon. And then it dawns on her, she is herself with a much younger lover. Gazing into her mirror, she notices subtle signs of aging in the passage of time, which is emphasized by the chiming of a clock 13 times. Octavian questions her about her sudden melancholiness, and she says that she knows it won't be long before he finds a young woman his own age. He tries to deny it and cheer her, but she knows she must come to terms with lost youth. The part of Octavian is a trouser role. That means a male part sung by a woman, in this case, the mezzo-soprano. From Act One of Rosenkavalier. Thank you. Maria Therese realizing time is passing and she must come to terms with her lost youth. From Strauss' wonderful comic and bittersweet Der Rosenkavalier, we heard Yvonne Minton as Octavian and Régine Crespin as Maria Therese. Georg Schulte conducted the Vienna Philharmonic. Well, I'm going to close tonight's program of woe with another serious moment from a comic opera. This is from Gilbert and Sullivan's Pirates of Penzance. Frederick was apprenticed to pirates instead of a ship's pilot because his guardian had bad hearing. Well, now that Frederick is 21, he is going to be released from his apprenticeship, and he's engaged to be married to Mabel. Unfortunately, he learns that although his agreement was until he was 21, it's actually until his 21st birthday, and he was born in leap year. He may not leave the pirates for 63 more years. Well, in this duet, Mabel brokenheartedly begs Frederick not to leave her alone and desolate. Frederick, though, is a slave to duty and tells her he must leave her alone and desolate.
Thank you.
Frederick must part from Mabel because he can't leave the pirates until his 21st birthday, and he was born in a leap year. From Gilbert and Sullivan's Pirates of Penzance, we heard Valerie Masterson as Mabel with Philip Potter as Frederick. Isidore Godfrey conducted the orchestra of the Doyley Cart Opera Company. Well, this is your host, Ron Adell. Thanks for joining me for tonight's Opera Box program of Woe and Despair. Stay tuned now for a Classic Monday.
Support comes from Emporium Presents, featuring guitarists Tommy Emmanuel and Jerry Douglas, together at the Mackey Auditorium on Friday, November 30th. Tickets available at Ticketmaster.com.
Well, good evening and welcome to KGNU's A Classic Monday. I'm still your host, Ron Nadell, and I want to tell you a story. Well, I want to play you some stories. So tonight I'm continuing my series of programs of classical music based on some kind of unspoken narrative, stories, scenes, animals, nature, and places. And tonight's stories are all inspired by Italy. I'll have music of Liszt, Elgar, Strauss, and Respighi, and Tchaikovsky, so grab your Baedekers and join me for tonight's monologue. Travelogue. Tonight, my program features music inspired by or evoking Italy. Tone paintings inspired by the sights of Italy. And most of tonight's playlists come from composers who visited Italy and wanted to encapsulate their visual experiences in music. But this next work is by the great Italian tone poet, Ottorino Respighi, with his Fountains of Rome. He composed the Fountains of Rome in 1916 as the first part of his Roman trilogy, which also includes the Pines of Rome, which we've heard on this program, and Roman festivals. This four-part work depicts four famous fountains in Rome as seen at different times of the day: dawn, then morning, noon, and sunset. The first is the fountains of the Valle Giulia. It's a large columnar kind of garden fountain. The music is quiet, like daybreak, and suggests a very pastoral setting with cattle going nearby. The second fountain is the Triton Fountain in morning in the Piazza Barberini,